This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, April 6th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, a Colorado author has just won a prestigious literary award. We'll revisit her past comments on KGNU. This time on the Cannabis Report, marijuana reporter Leland Rucker asks how much control municipalities and counties should have over marijuana and psychedelic therapy. Then, Radio Nibbles host John Lindorf will be in the studio to catch us up on local food news. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. After that, it's the one-year anniversary program of Kitchen Table Talk. Today's guests are from Olin Farms and Regenerative Rising. Then at 9:30, Dennis Ryder will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first a look at the headlines. With KGNU's Benita Lee.
The results from Denver's local election are shifting as officials continue to count ballots. The top two mayoral candidates of a field of 16 will compete in a runoff in June. As of 5 p.m. Wednesday, Mike Johnston was still in the lead with Kelly Broff in second place. However, third-place candidate Lisa Calderon has been catching up to Broff with each new round of newly counted ballots. Candidates for City Council Districts 7, 8, 9, and 10 also appear to be headed for a runoff. Ballots counted over the course of Wednesday have brought incumbents Candy Sidibaka and Chris Hines into the lead in their districts, but they're both currently below the 50% threshold to avoid a runoff. In related news, Kwame Spearman, who exited the mayoral race shortly before Election Day, has stepped down from his CEO position at Tattered Cover Books. He is reportedly considering a run for the Denver School Board. Students around Colorado walked out of school yesterday as part of a National Day of Action Against Gun Violence. KGNU's Alyssa Palazzo reports.
Wednesday's walkout comes less than 2 weeks after thousands of students and community members rallied on the steps of the state capitol in Denver. They called on lawmakers to take action against gun violence after a student entered East High School late last month and shot two administrators. The shooting came weeks after another gun incident at East High when a student was shot in his car near campus. Students in Lyons joined protesters across the country in a nationwide school walkout.
We are sick and tired of no change, and we are out here today not to miss school, but to hopefully change some minds, maybe give perspective to people and to have people see where we're coming from.
Students who participated in the protests included Lakewood, Denver, Wheat Ridge, and Jefferson County schools. For KGNU, I'm Alyssa Palazzo.
U.S. Senator John Hickenlooper of Colorado and Senator Alex Padilla of California sent a letter to the CEOs of 27 major companies accused of employing migrant children in unsafe and unlawful situations. KGNU's Eli Kalin has more.
In February, the Department of Labor fined Packard Sanitation Services $1.5 million for employing children to work with hazardous materials and dangerous equipment. The company is one of the nation's largest food and safety sanitation service providers. The letter comes on the heels of a major investigative report by the New York Times. The report documented a widespread practice of factories employing children who came to the U.S. as unaccompanied minors. Other companies that received the letter included General Mills, PepsiCo, Fruit of a Loom, Walmart, Frito-Lay, Valley Nature Foods, J. Crew, Target, Whole Foods, Ford Motors, General Motors, Hyundai, and Kia. Senators Hickenlooper and Padilla, who chair the Senate committees, asked the CEOs to respond to six questions regarding labor practices by April 26th. For KGNU, I'm Eli Kalin.
Denver's Department of Public Health and Environment is examining how to use millions of dollars in settlement funding to address the opioid crisis. Health officials are seeking proposals from substance abuse and behavioral health organizations that can offer methods for prevention, treatment, and expanded services. The funding comes from a multi-state lawsuit filed by attorneys general who sued opioid manufacturers and distributors. Colorado is expected to receive about $700 million in settlements over the next 18 years. Opioids have killed over 8,000 Coloradans in the past 20 years, with almost 1,000 deaths in 2020 alone. UC Health launched a new program in February that translates prescription labels for certain medications into languages for non-English speakers. Since then, the Longmont Leader reports that UC Health pharmacies have dispensed over 2,000 translated prescription labels. Over 16% of Coloradan households speak a language at home other than English. The 26 languages available for translation include Spanish, Arabic, Russian, Korean, French, Nepali, and Somali. UC Health started the program to support their patients' understanding of medical instructions and prevent potentially life-threatening errors. Boulder residents are collecting signatures for a ballot measure that would amend the city's camping ban on public property. According to Boulder Reporting Lab, the Safe Zones for Kids petition would require removing tents or propane tanks quickly if they are within 500 feet of a school or within 50 feet of a sidewalk. The petition comes after the explosion of a propane tank in an encampment near Boulder High School. The organizers of the Safe Zones for Kids petition have expressed concern for child safety during school commutes. Boulder officials say they updated policies earlier this year to no longer give 72-hour notice before clearing out encampments on high-traffic public paths. They say they are also prioritizing enforcement near schools. The ACLU of Colorado is suing Boulder to overturn its camping ban, citing a lack of shelters within the city. It's chilly this morning, but a sunny, clear day is expected throughout the Front Range. In Boulder and Denver, it'll warm up to highs in the low 50s and cool down at night to lows around 28. And in Fort Collins, a high near 49 and a low around 23. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. A Colorado author has just won a prestigious literary award. Marcia Douglas, who is originally from Jamaica, teaches creative writing at CU Boulder. She is the recipient of the 2023 Whiting Award for Fiction. Rocky Mountain Community Radio's Maeve Conran spoke with Douglas in 2018 on the publication of her latest book, The Marvelous Equations of the Dread, a novel in bass rhythm, which explores Jamaica's history. Douglas says the book was written out of a reggae aesthetic.
I have used structural devices in the book which are drawn from the world of reggae, such as dubside, version, remix, that sort of thing. So on the level of structure, it works in that way. I also tried to infuse the language with something of a reggae or bassline type of rhythm. But also the way in which the bass rhythm functions in the book is that it has the power to call back the dead. And so that's how Bob Marley and other ancestors return. You know, bass rhythm is a very powerful thing.
But talk a little bit more about exactly what that is for listeners who maybe aren't as familiar.
Right. Well, reggae is only as good as the bass, I feel. You know, if you have no bass, then you really have no reggae. And so it seems to me that if you're going to write out of a reggae aesthetic, you need to somehow honor that bass, honor that rhythm. And so that's what I'm going for in various ways, and using the bass rhythm in a symbolic sort of way as well, in terms of the deepness of history and of emotion, all of those things. It carries a lot of energy.
Well, you say that it has the power to bring back the dead. And there are several characters in the book that are brought back from the dead. Bob Marley, also Marcus Garvey, the Jamaican nationalist. Bob Marley's father, Norval, who appears as well, and some other characters as well. Hayley Selassie.
Yes. You know, there is this sense in the novel, in the world of this novel, that there is so much suffering in Jamaica, or as we would say, sufferation, that we need something beyond ourselves. Right. And so the music of the people calls back the dead. We need these ancestors to somehow come forth so that we can have a new conversation and a sense of direction. So I wrote the book for the healing of the nations. So it's written out of that sort of sensibility.
There are so many symbols in the book. The dreadlocks, because that's a theme throughout it. Of course, it's in the title of the book. There's a ring, a ring that Bob Marley wore that supposedly, well, in the book, there are replicas of that ring, but Bob had the real ring.
Right.
Is that an actual ring?
It is an actual ring. And there's all sorts of stories and mythologies which surround that ring. It is said that when Bob Marley was alive, that he was given a ring which had belonged to Haile Selassie. He had been given the ring by one of Selassie's sons. You know, there's all sorts of mythology around the ring, some of which may or may not be based in truth, but it's all very interesting. Selassie, as you know, was of the lineage of King Solomon. And there's a story of King Solomon's ring. And there are all of these stories about the ring which Bob Marley was given, that maybe it contained bits of gold from King Solomon's ring. As I said, some of that may or may not be true, but it's very interesting and it's great for the imagination of a novel, right? Whether you want to think of this ring as literally being of King Solomon's or not, it has a lot of symbolic and metaphoric significance. To me, it's a powerful ring either way, right?
And talk about then the locks as well, because that has so much potency as a symbol, but also in real life as well.
The locks are important. I think the passage that you're probably referring to, the storyline, is Lena's. Lena is a Rasta woman. When her mother was alive, she had been given a bit of her mother's lock, which she lost. And throughout the novel, she mourns the loss of that lock. In the novel and in the Rastafari imagination, the dreadlocks are an important symbol of identity, African identity. And therefore, the lock, it carries something of the history of the nation and the identity of the people as well. So to lose the lock then comes to be a loss, which is not just a personal loss, but it also signifies something of an erasure of a certain consciousness as well. So that's how, one way at least, in which the lock functions.
Marcia Douglas speaking with Maeve Conran about her book, The Marvelous Equations of the Dread, a novel in bass rhythm. Douglas, who teaches creative writing at CU Boulder, has just been awarded the 2023 Whiting Award for Fiction. You are listening to The Morning Magazine. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Up next is The Cannabis Report.
And now it's time for The Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. I'm Hannah Lee Myers, and as always, I'm joined by our longtime cannabis correspondent, Leland Rucker. Leland, thank you so much for being here.
Good morning.
So this morning, we're going to talk about how much control municipalities and counties should have over marijuana and psychedelic therapy. Fill us in here. This is an interesting thought project. I like that you're bringing this to our attention, Leland.
Yeah, this is, you know, one of the biggest selling points for getting voters in Colorado to allow sales of marijuana was that towns and counties could vote to allow or not to allow sales. And there's still plenty of places in the state where you can't buy any cannabis. There are a lot of places where you can buy, Boulder and Denver being good examples. But, the city of Palmer Lake, which is a city off Colorado 105 west of Monument, south of Denver, they started selling pot recreationally last weekend. And it comes at a time when voters in Colorado Springs, as we recall, they rejected recreational sales in November. And the city of Palmer Lake admits in the press release that part of the reason for the move to recreational sales was more revenue. The city said in a press release they looked at options to develop revenue, which came down to cannabis sales or property taxes. cannabis passed. So November's ballot measure, it passed 55% to 45%. It makes Palmer Lake only the second municipality to offer retail recreational sales in El Paso County. And both that opened to recreational sales had been medical facilities before, but they weren't making it as medical facilities. And, you know, med revenues have been dropping steadily across the state. You know, it's been a regular thing. And also, the city of Golden, 17 months after voters said yes to recreational cannabis sales, they joined the parade, and Vert's Neighborhood Dispensary, formerly Golden Alternative Medicine and the city's only medical marijuana shop, made its first recreational cannabis sale during a soft opening recently. And by the end of the summer, there'll be three more in the city of Golden. They allowed four licenses. So meanwhile, just a reminder that up north of Colorado, in Wyoming, in Cheyenne, city council voted against any kind of changes in marijuana laws. It voted 6-3 to reject a proposal to decriminalize marijuana. Just that simple thing. The proposal would have repealed and amended a city ordinance that prohibits marijuana possession, and people that would be found in the possession of marijuana in the city would not be ticketed, but they still could have faced charges in state or federal court. But that's about as little as you can do, and it didn't pass there. So just a reminder. And then I got to thinking, because I saw a recent story in the Denver Post, and it concentrated on Coakdale, little town, 150 residents west of Trinidad, way down south. It's an old coal mining hub. And they found that the recent psychedelic law passed in the state, Proposition 122, which decriminalized the growing use and sharing of psilocybin and key compounds found in magic mushrooms, along with ibogaine, mescaline, and DMT, it doesn't allow a city or county to opt out of psychedelic therapy.
I'm glad you're bringing this up, because I'm not sure that a lot of people are aware of this.
No, I certainly wasn't. And in this respect, this is totally different than the marijuana laws. And we have to, you know, make sure we know that. But city and county governments in Colorado are, in fact, not allowed to banish the psychedelics industry from inside their borders. This is Senator Steven Fenberg, who is a Boulder Democrat. We're all familiar with him. He's the Senate president. He says Proposition 122 specifically prohibits local bans, but there are some controls, he said. A municipality can't ban, he said, but it can regulate time, place, and manner. Okay, that's something to be said for that. And so, should local jurisdictions be allowed to stop marijuana and or psychedelic therapy? I'm not going to take a stance here one way or the other, but I also buy my marijuana legally at my local store. But it's a worthwhile question to say, you know, I mean, I think that probably local jurisdictions should have it.
Well, I think it certainly has been politically very advantageous for cannabis in Colorado to give the ability to opt in and out. I think that's been very beneficial to getting cannabis passed as far as legalized and protected. I think without that, it would have been a hard sale to get some of the legalization efforts passed that we've seen in the state.
And it's good to know that the difference in the two laws, I mean, I guess that the laws were pretty much the same, but this says that no, they're completely different.
And interesting too that cannabis was essentially the plant medicine of choice that Colorado approved initially, and now it can be banned from municipalities as it always has been able to be banned, but other plant medicines like psychedelics cannot be. That is so interesting
that
cannabis is not protected, as it were, in that sense, as a medicine, like magic mushrooms are in the state. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep watching this for sure.
Thank you so much for bringing us to our attention, Leland. Sure. And you can catch the Cannabis Report on KGNU the first and third Thursdays of every month. For KGNU, I'm Hanalee Myers.
It's Thursday, and
Radio Nibbles host John Lindorf is in the house and in the studio to talk about the surprising number of food and beverage classes of all sorts available in Boulder County. Welcome, John.
Good morning, Shannon, and good morning, everyone out there gathered around the humongous KGNU kitchen table. And it's a beautiful spring day, isn't it? I mean, it's just stunning and wonderful.
Before I say that, I should look at the weather report and see if it's going to stay that way.
Of course not. Wonderful thing has finally happened. It happened with the restaurants, too, but after 3 years of not happening, there are classes of all kinds in food and beverage all over Boulder County. And, you know, it's the best thing you can do. Like, you know, as a cook, one of the best things you can do is to just take a class in how to use a knife. Mm. You can do that at a number of places in town. But as far as schools go, one of the big ones is the Auguste Escoffier School in Table Mesa. Everybody knows it as a professional training school. They've started a series of home cook classes that are just wonderful, taught by a professional chef in their teaching kitchen. So it's like it's set up for you to really learn how to make tapas or tortillas or, you know, I mean, they cover the full range, but they have knife classes.
See, I will you explain it to me? Like, what is it that really that you see when somebody's using a knife and just be like, oh, you amateur? What are we doing wrong when we haven't had that training when it comes to knife technique?
People terrify me when I see them cut things because they're not holding the knife right. It's very scary. You can hurt yourself. The one thing I'll say about knives is
they're sharp.
Sharp is better than better than dull. The other big school in town is Food Lab, which is downtown, and they do more kind of social classes. But the one I wanted to especially note is have you heard about Journey Culinary in Longmont?
No, I have not.
It's almost like a cultural immersion cooking classes in Spanish food and other things, and language and music and food in this class, and then you eat together. And
well, so, food is culture, right?
Yeah, yeah, and then some of the other places you can learn about cooking, the Art of Cheese in Longmont. You can go to the farm, learn how to make cheese. Ozo Coffee has classes in how to make coffee and how to be a barista. There's a couple of places where you can learn how to make chocolate, or at least make truffles, which is never a bad thing to know how to do. And there's other places that teach you how to do meat and cheese boards or mixed drinks or make barbecue in the greater Boulder County area.
Okay.
And
all right.
You can find out all of these things in the feast section of the Boulder Weekly. There's a story called Learning to Taste, and you can get all the details.
So I'm taking that's what's in your Nibbles column today?
No, that's actually in a special section.
Oh.
That's on the stands, and it will be. So
it's
easy to find. No, Nibbles today is about spoon and spade. We've talked a lot about box, you know, delivery services, which, you know, you understand the convenience.
But, sure.
But they answer the problem of excess packaging, how it's delivered, and they source most of their food from here. And so that's today in Nibbles.
All right. How's your coffee and pie tasting going?
That's
coming up, right?
It's Saturday.
All right.
It's going to be a magnificently cool event. I'll be there to talk about the history of pie. John Hinman will be there to talk about his pies, which are going to be paired. Five pies, five craft coffees. You'll learn how to make coffee. And this is Saturday, and it all benefits KGNU.
100%. Yeah, 100% of the proceeds go to KGNU. So, you know, why don't you, if you don't have plans, you know, that's an option that is on the table.
Yeah.
Sweet and savory pies paired with Ozo Coffee and great conversation with John Lindorf. Speaking of which, what's the best thing you've tasted lately?
You know, usually it's something I tasted out and about, but I got this box, and I had this leftover tofu from making sog, actually. And, you know, I decided to do something I almost never do, which is to fry, you know?
Yeah.
And so I cut up the firm tofu and put it in a little bit of olive oil and put it on the stove and promptly, of course, forgot about it and went back to work. And I ended up with this incredibly, wonderfully crispy, browned little bits of tofu. The taste was wonderful. Maybe it was just because I never fry anything.
Well, you can listen to podcasts of previous Radio Nibbles episodes at news@kgnu.org.
And don't touch that dial, because in a couple of minutes, Kitchen Table Talk, our monthly call-in show, is coming on the air with Chef Dan Asher and some very cool guests.
That's going to do it for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Benita Lee, Alyssa Palazzo, Eli Kalin, Alexis Kenyon, Maeve Conran, and Radio Nibbles host John Lindorf for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for Kitchen Table Talk. That's coming up on the other side of the BBC News headlines.